Out of the blue, some people lose a couple pounds for no reason. Everybody loves that, but you can also bump up a few pounds, which isn't so great. Mysterious Weight Changes, the book Eat This, Not That, and much, much more on episode 58 of Fat to Fit Radio.
Welcome to Fat to Fit Radio, your source for real weight loss solutions without the hype. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Ainsley and Russ Turley.
Hello and welcome to the show. So how are you doing, Russ?
I am doing very well. Ready to keep it real here on our first little section of the show.
All right, well, let's get right into it. Last show, you were 243. So how are you doing this week?
Well, unfortunately, I am right now currently at 243 pounds. We'll talk about that in a sec. But eating goal-wise, I'm a 9 out of 10, doing really well on that. My exercise goal, still a 3 out of 10. I am coming up to the end of my recuperation from surgery and my wound, so that's going to get better soon. And my motivation for the week, this is my big one, 10 out of 10.
All right, so what really set you back then? Is it just the exercise, do you think?
Well, it's the exercise, yes. I mean, I'm still eating a low calorie, but actually, after I stopped taking antibiotics, I had some weird stomach things and actually gained like 3 pounds over the last week or so, and I've actually then got it back down. So really, it's been a 6 pound three up and three down in the last week or so. So actually, I'm considering it a real victory.
Well, it will all average out in the end, so we'll see how you're doing next show.
Yeah, but I want to talk about motivation this week, because if you go on Facebook right now, there are some compromising pictures of me doing karaoke. And that shirt I'm wearing, I was going through the closet going, what am I going to wear at this party? What am I going to wear? And I pulled that shirt out. And, you know, if you haven't worn something in a long time, maybe it's a little bit musty, kind of a dusty smell. Well, that smell is now the smell of victory, because that shirt I was wearing was just skin tight. Last time I tried to wear it, maybe 6 months ago, and now it's fitting big and loose. And I wore it. And I'm like, this is awesome. So, the smell of victory is a musty smell from clothes you haven't worn because you were too darn fat to fit in them.
Well, that is just excellent to hear. But let's move on to our email and comment section. And our first email came in from Nicole, and she wrote, "I've started listening to your show at the end of last year, and I love it. I need some advice. I try to eat healthy, lean proteins, high fiber, fruits and veggies, etc. I also try eating every 3 hours, but I still feel really hungry quite often. It takes a lot of willpower not to scarf down everything in sight. Any suggestions? Could it be I'm not eating the right amount of foods or possibly not enough calories? Any help would be great. Just to let you know, I'm 5'8", 145 pounds, and get moderate exercise."
All right, so we got that message from Nicole, and I responded by email, and this is what I wrote to her. "The one thing you didn't mention is the number of calories you're eating right now. Without that knowledge first, it's almost impossible to tell why you're hungry. But if I had to guess, my first one would be you're not eating enough. If you're eating below 1,630 calories, more or less, then you're at or below your BMR, your basal metabolic rate. If you do get moderate exercise, then you could be burning 2,200 to 2,400 calories a day. My second guess would be that you're not eating enough fats. You mentioned lean protein, fruits, and vegetables, but you didn't mention what good fats you're eating. Fats play a big part in satiety, as do proteins, and they make you feel satisfied with the meal that you just ate. Again, those are just guesses, and my suggestion was to just track the calories you're eating for a week or two, and to let us know what the outcome was. I haven't heard back from Nicole yet, but Jeff, what would you suggest for her?
Well, I agree with what you said about the calories. If you're eating too little, your body will eventually win and cause you to binge. Make sure that you are eating enough. Ideally, you should not have to be hungry while losing weight, but keep in mind that those two great quotes from the last show, remember, when you're feeling hungry, you can say to yourself, hunger isn't an emergency. And that really good one, hunger is the feeling of fat cells shrinking. Saying those two things to yourself just might get you past that temporary hunger. Remember, if you're eating every 3 hours, you don't have to suffer too long. You also need to eat a lean protein with every meal, like Russ was saying. They used to think that it was the fat content and low-carb diets that made people feel fuller, but now it's believed that it's the amount of protein. So you don't have to be on a low-carb eating plan, but just make sure that you have some protein with every meal. And another thing, when you start eating every 3 hours, it does speed up your metabolism, and often you'll feel hungry before each meal. This might just take a little time for your body to adjust to it. If you find that you are really hungry, Just make sure that you don't eat everything in sight. Eat something low in calories and high in fiber. Some of the best things that I use when I'm hungry between meals are carrots and apples. They're really easy to have with you and full of cellulose, which you can't digest, so you actually don't get all the calories out of them, but they will help you feel a little fuller.
All right, we're going to move on to item number two here in our email and comments section. And actually, we have two different items that they have the same question, but absolutely opposite results. And let's check them out here. First one is from David from the Fat to Fit Support Forum over at Trainio. And the title of the post was, "Am I Losing Weight Too Quickly?" And David wrote, "I know that title sounds strange, but I am a little concerned. The week before last, I lost 1.4 pounds. I feel this is a nice and safe progress and a good rate of fat loss. This week, without really changing anything within my diet, I have bounced around a bit, but have ended with a 4-pound weight loss. I'm wondering if it is normal to have fast and slow weight loss weeks, and if I should look at the combined month of weight loss, 7 pounds, which is good, rather than isolate just one week."
And he continues, "I doubt it was all water weight, as I've been losing weight for the past 4 months or so. The only change I did make this week is I started a daily sample pack of one of those splashy-looking fat loss supplements. Now, he did say what it was, but I'm not going to give them the advertising, but he was using one of these fancy fat burners. He used it for a week in the mornings before his morning cardio, and he continues, "Now, I'm not recommending this supplement as I don't really think it had much to do with my weight loss, but I'm just saying that this is the only real change that I made to my diet that week when I lost that extra weight."
All right, and our second message was from Laura, and she wrote, "First, let me say I love your podcast. Finally, someone makes weight loss make sense. I have a question that I hope you can help me with. I know you have to consume 3,500 calories to gain a pound. This week, I ate at least 1,500 over my calorie allowance, which should amount to just under a half of a pound of weight gain. So, can you explain why the scale shows nearly 2.5 pound increase in my weight? I don't get it."
You see, this was the perfect set of emails to come in because one person gained some weight, one person lost some weight. So they just go perfectly together. So David, in the first email, lost a mysterious 2.6 pounds and Laura gained an extra 2.5 pounds. Now, there's two possible solutions. The first possibility is that there is a constant level of fat in the entire world. And if someone loses weight, that weight has to go somewhere and will end up on someone else. We see this every single day. So think about it. Everyone weighs more at night than they did in the morning. Is it a coincidence that when North Americans go to bed at night weighing more, that the Chinese are waking up in the morning weighing less? You got to think about that. Well, probably not. But the second possibility is that everyone's weight will fluctuate for a variety of reasons, and you may not be able to pinpoint the reason for every fluctuation. For example, my weight is guaranteed to bump up 3 or 4 pounds if I eat salty movie popcorn. I don't eat a lot of salt in my diet, and when I do, I retain a lot of water for the next few days. Even in the most controlled weight loss studies where people eat the exact amounts of food and exercise the exact amounts of exercise calories, weight loss is never linear. There's always a lot of ups and downs along the way. Sometimes you'll struggle and struggle to lose an ounce for a week, and then all of a sudden, your body catches up. Sometimes you can seem to be working hard, and your weight could bump up a little bit as well. Now, we aren't machines, so you don't always get exactly what you expect on a daily or even a weekly basis.
Yeah, and it's totally natural for this to happen. What you need to do is keep track of your average weight over a week to remove these fluctuations. As long as your average is moving in the right direction, you don't have to worry about anything. And like Jeff said before, your goal really isn't to weigh a certain amount. It is to be a smaller person. So make sure you're tracking your measurements with a tape measure as well. If your weight fluctuates a couple of pounds, you won't see a difference in the size of your thighs or your arms, for example. And if you're keeping track of your body fat percentage by using something like a body fat scale, you won't see big fluctuations there either.
These two emails were a really big concern for me because this is how superstitions are created with things related to weight loss. You try something new, and just because there was a correlation, meaning that two things happened at the same time, it doesn't necessarily mean that one thing caused the other. So when David lost those extra 2.5 pounds that 1 week because he started that fat burner, it's just as reasonable to think that those extra 2.5 pounds of weight loss could have been caused by wearing black socks one day of the week. The bottom line is that 2.5 pounds of fat loss or fat gain is around 9,000 calories. Perhaps over a couple of years, if you use a fat burner supplement, that could be responsible for those extra 9,000 calories, but definitely not over a number of days or weeks. A calorie, if you think about it, is just technically a measurement of heat. So to burn all of those extra calories without exercise, your body would be just like a furnace. It would actually have to heat up to burn those calories. You would actually be in an intense and serious fever for that entire week, sweating and dripping in sweat the entire week to burn those extra calories. You definitely would have noticed that. The bottom line is, as long as you're keeping track of your average weight from week to week and you're measuring things like your measurements and your body fat percentage, that doesn't really matter. It's just one indicator that's not always the best to keep track of.
All right. Very good. I'd like to thank Nicole and David and Laura for all those great questions. If you would like to leave us a comment or question, there are a couple ways to do that. The first one is to leave a comment over on the website at fat2fitradio.com.
Or you can send us an email to podcast@fattofitradio.com.
Third way is to leave a voicemail by clicking on the call me button on fattofitradio.com.
Or you can join our support group at fattofitsupport.com.
All right, let's get into the web report with a couple of news items. Jeff, what news item did you steal from me this week?
Well, this week I beat you to this one. It is a New England Journal of Medicine study that just came out this week, and it was entitled Comparison of Weight Loss Diets with Different Compositions of Fat, Protein, and Carbohydrates. Now, that was the actual study that came out, but it was reported everywhere. I saw it on CNN. I'm going to link to an article from Time.com that talks about it. It was all over the place. I even listened to a podcast from NPR called Science Friday, and they had an interview with one of the researchers, and there was a lot of really not surprising conclusions, but here's the basics of what went on. This study was from the Harvard School of Public Health, and as I said, it came out on February the 26th issue of New England Journal of Medicine. They took 811 obese patients. Participants were randomly assigned to one of four heart-healthy diets, low-fat or high-fat, with either average or high levels of protein. All four regimens also included high amounts of whole grains, fruits, and vegetables, and substituted saturated fat found in foods such as butter and meat with unsaturated fat found in vegetable oil and nuts. The participants were encouraged to exercise 90 minutes a week. Now, this study went on for 2 years, and on average, the study participants lost about 13 pounds after the first 6 months of dieting, or about 7% of their starting weight, regardless of which diet plan they followed. At the one-year mark, the dieters had regained some of the lost weight, and after 2 years, average weight loss was about 9 pounds. The study also offered individual and group counseling sessions. Over the course of the 2 years, participants who went to at least two-thirds of the counseling sessions dropped about 22 pounds on average, and that's 13 pounds more than the average of the entire study population. So we talked about support and weight loss briefly on the last show, and that just shows how powerful that is. Those people more than doubled their weight loss because they had a support network. The bottom line of the study is that all diets were equally as effective after 2 years. The most important factor was basic physiology, eating fewer calories than you expend. So that was really showing that no matter which diet you go on, as long as you can stick to it and have a calorie deficit throughout, you will lose weight. And they even found the diets like the really high protein diets where they say it will make you feel a little bit fuller if you're eating so much protein. They said it might make you fuller in the short term, but after 2 years, everything totally leveled out. And as long as you're sticking with the diet, that was the most important thing. Another thing about the study, people had the opportunity to change the diets that they were on. So after a month or two, if they found they didn't really like the food, they could try a different diet. And this was really important because if they chose a diet that they liked, it was easier for them to stay on it. And that's really the most important thing, having a lifestyle change, eating what you like, and eating a little bit less in your calories. So Russ, was this totally surprising to you that no matter what diet you were on, it didn't matter after 2 years?
Yeah, after our conversation with Tom Venuto last show, this makes total sense. And his idea that, you know, we don't have a weight loss problem, we have a weight maintenance problem. This kind of brought that full circle and really enforced that idea. But the one thing that I found extremely interesting in the article was the support. The people who had support in their weight loss, they did better. People who they had somebody to talk to, they had other people around them who are going through the same thing, who are cutting those calories and, you know, eating the right amount of food and working out and having a healthy lifestyle just like they are. And there's camaraderie there. And that was probably the most important thing I found from that study.
Well, I will leave links in the show notes that will go to time.com because they have a really good summary of the study itself. And I'll also leave a link to the New England Journal of Medicine. It's actually a pretty easy article to read, but it gets into all of the nitty-gritty of things that they did throughout the entire study. And they get a few more conclusions that we didn't talk about as well. So if you're interested in reading any of those articles, the links will be in the show notes. So Russ, what do you have for us this week?
Well, this week I have an article from found on newswise.com. It's from the Southern Medical Center. A title of the article is Weight Loss More Effective Than Intensive Insulin Therapy. They have here, it says weight loss and major lifestyle changes may be more effective than intensive insulin therapy for overweight patients. And these are patients that have poorly controlled type 2 insulin resistant diabetes. And the researcher, and Jeff made a joke here earlier to me, was Dr. Unger. Sounds like Dr. Hunger. It's very funny. He's investigated diabetes, obesity, and insulin resistance for more than 50 years. And he said intensive insulin therapy is contraindicated for obese patients with insulin-resistant type 2 diabetes because, and this is the cool part, it increases the fatty acids that cause diabetes. Instead, the most rational therapy eliminates excess calories, thereby reducing the amount of insulin in the blood and the synthesis of fatty acids stimulated by the high insulin. Giving more insulin simply increases body fat. So let's just break that down a bit here. If you have insulin-resistant type 2 diabetes, it's because you're obese, your pancreas has stopped producing insulin, and so you have all this extra sugar running around your blood. Because of that, the doctors want to give you insulin. All that will do is push more fat into your body. The insulin will take that sugar out of your blood and store it into fat. That's what insulin does. It takes the sugar out of your bloodstream and stores it as fat. Therefore, making you fatter and just prolonging and just making worse this diabetes. What this Dr. Unger is saying is by limiting your calories, you are then reducing the amount of insulin that's needed in your blood. And therefore, you're not going to make these fatty acids that are stimulated by the high insulin. I've heard many articles about how when people who have the gastric bypass surgery, they're calling that a cure for diabetes. Well, what that is people who have the gastric bypass surgery are severely limiting their calories. They're only eating 1,000 calories, 1,200 calories a day because they can't eat anymore. Their stomachs are this tiny little pouch. And that's kind of goes along with this study that, you know, by lowering the number of calories you're eating, and you also will be losing that weight, you don't need as much insulin, and overall, you're going to be better.
Well, that makes a lot of sense to me because type 2 diabetes is really a lifestyle disease that was not prevalent 50 or 100 years ago. And we're seeing children who are getting type 2 diabetes right now as their average weights are increasing. And it's epidemic in a lot of populations right now in the United States and in Canada. If you think of it the other way, what caused this huge epidemic to start? It's lifestyle and people eating more and eating more processed carbs and junk food. Turning that around, it actually is working and it is helping people losing some weight and eating healthier. Yes, it's not wearing out those insulin receptors anymore. You're not producing so much insulin and people are getting better without relying on drugs. So I think it's really positive that people can see that they can make a big difference in their life and dealing with type 2 diabetes just by changing their lifestyle. You can make huge improvements. And one more thing, we are preparing a show that we will do in a couple months that's all about type 2 diabetes. And we're really going to try to give people a true representation to what it's like to have type 2 diabetes. So hopefully people will change their lifestyle before it's just too late.
Yeah, you know, it's so prevalent. And I can think of at least three people in my life, either friends or family that have had type 2 diabetes and are one trying to lose weight or two are having to go on some kind of insulin and it's not making their life any easier. So that's going to be a great show. So be sure to stay subscribed and get that show when it comes out.
All right. Well, let's move on to our feature section. And this week we are talking about a book entitled Eat This, Not That. We mentioned it on a show a few weeks ago, but we got a voicemail from Drina that really got us interested in taking a close look at it.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to give a shout out to you. This is Drina Tischler calling, and the reason I'm calling is several shows back, you made a brief mention of a book called Eat This, Not That, and mentioned that you hadn't read the book. And I just wanted to let you know that it's actually a really great book. It's not a food plan or an eating plan at all. In fact, what they do is they take stuff that you might eat, say a sandwich at Burger King, and they make a really practical suggestion for having something either very similar or from the same food chain for a lot fewer calories and lower saturated fat. So it's really a cool book. So if you really do have it around your house, Russ, I hope you'll pick it up and take a look at it. All right, that's it. Thanks. I love the show. You're a great inspiration to me. Bye.
So that was a great recommendation for the book. But also this past week, a few friends came over for dinner at my house, and we ended up having a long conversation about the book. So what's the book all about? First, it was written by David Zinczenko. He's the editor-in-chief of Men's Health Magazine, and also Matt Golding, the editor of Food and Nutrition for Men's Health. So in one sentence, what is this book? It is a series of comparisons of fast food restaurant meals, ones that you should eat on the left-hand side of the book compared to the ones that you shouldn't eat on the right-hand side of the book. So let's step through the book chapter by chapter and see what it's all about. Chapter 1 is simply a list of the 8 foods that you should eat every day, superfoods, the book calls them. It also lists the 20 foods that you should avoid at all costs. If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you probably heard us talk about this list, with the worst food being the Outback Steakhouse steak fries with ranch dressing. It comes in about 2,900 calories for that meal. Chapter 2 consumes the next 120 pages. This is the meat of the book. Some of the comparisons can be quite surprising. One of those surprising ones was from Arby's. It's on the not that side. It's the roast beef and Swiss market fresh sandwich. And at 810 calories, it's pretty surprising compared to the eat this option, the super roast beef sandwich for 440 calories. I expected the market fresh sandwich with the wheat bread instead of the bun to be more healthy, but the sauces and cheese on that market fresh sandwich make a huge difference. Another surprising comparison was from Baskin-Robbins. If you get a 2-scoop sundae, you get that for 530 calories, while a 2-scoop cone with no sauce or sprinkles or all that good stuff, that'll get you about 660 calories on that not that side. And that sundae is half the fat. And this was achieved by the ice cream choice. One final comparison, here's one of my wife's favorites, Chick-fil-A. Now, if you live in Southern California, Chick-fil-A is awesome. But a chicken sandwich is only 270 calories. While the chicken Caesar wrap, maybe you think maybe is more healthy, if you're not getting that bun, it comes in at a hefty 480 calories and 4 times the fat. So that's an interesting that chapter 2 has so many great comparisons. So it gets into meat of the book, and check that out. Chapter 3 is where it gets interesting for me and maybe you, the reader. Chapter 3 starts the menu decoder, showing you how to order from any menu. Now, for an example here of the menu decoder, this past weekend I went to a Thai restaurant for the first time. I took a look at the Thai restaurant page and saw that the pad Thai noodles were a good choice. I also saw in the book that I wanted to avoid the shrimp fried rice, which happened to be offered to me by the waiter as part of a special along with the pad Thai noodles. So I knew I needed to stay away from that. I said, no, just bring me the noodles. The fourth chapter here, the holiday and special occasions. They're up next. And during Thanksgiving and Christmas, we mentioned on the show to not worry about how much you eat during the holidays. One of the sayings we mentioned on the show was, it's not what you eat between Christmas and New Year's. It's what you eat between New Year's and Christmas. So chapter 4 gives you some healthy alternatives to the traditional high-calorie holiday meal. A good example of this would be the 4th of July, or Independence Day, here in the U.S. So on the eat this side, we've got a 6-ounce filet mignon, baked beans, coleslaw, chips, guacamole, and watermelon. Sounds pretty great, right? You're thinking that's a high calorie? No. That has half the calories of the not that side, which is a burger, corn on the cob, and potato salad. So you see, it doesn't always make a lot of sense. You know, intuitively you think, oh, maybe I'll have a burger instead of a steak, but that's a filet mignon, real low-fat steak. potato salad with all that mayonnaise, you know, it's going to make a big difference. So half the fat by having a filet mignon, really, really having a hardship there. And finally, the last few chapters here are talking about making better choices at a supermarket. There's actually a whole additional volume of the Eat This, Not That dedicated to supermarket choices. And the final chapter we'll mention here deals with different types of drinks. And the beer page is one of my favorites and one not to miss for sure. So in conclusion, preparing your meals yourself will almost always be healthier for you. If you do eat out on a regular basis, this book can almost certainly help you make better choices. Will you lose weight by following the advice in the book? Maybe, maybe not. But the thing it will give you is the information you need to avoid that inadvertent cheat meal because you were unaware of what you were eating. And then really, isn't that the goal here? Conscious eating. Know what you're putting in your body. So Jeff, have you taken a look at this book at all?
I haven't seen the book yet, but I'm always finding myself, I'm eating something healthy at a restaurant, and then later the next week or the next day, I look it up on the internet to see what the calories are, and sometimes I just get blown away. The thing that really gets me are the quesadillas. They look just like, you know, two little pieces of flatbread with a bit of cheese and some chicken, and I'm thinking, oh, maybe 300 or 400 calories, and I look them up, and they're always 1,000 or 1,200 calories, and it just blows me away, because that's something that if you make it home, it's really low in calorie. You get it out at a restaurant, and it's just always super high calorie. So I think really seeing a lot of examples of what's good and what's bad, even though they look so similar to the average person, they'll kind of build up in your memory all of these little things and rules that you might subconsciously remember, and that will save you a lot of calories in the long run.
Yeah, you know, there is a lot of these articles on the internet and blog posts and things will tell you, no, oh, this is a eat this, not that. Kind of the same thing as this book. Thing I'm taking, you know, you can get this book and it has a lot of great information in it. But if you go on the internet and do your research, if you have that iPhone app, you know, you can look up the calories that you're about to consume. A lot of these things are in there and they'll tell you before you order it that you're going to be eating, you know, 1,200 calories worth of steak and baked potato there with gigantic gobs of sour cream and butter that, you know, it's not a good idea. Go with that other healthy choice. And that's where that also the menu decoder, I think, becomes really important because it'll show you certain things on, you know, for tapas here, I'm looking at it, Chinese, Thai, I mentioned, at the salad bar. Which ones do you avoid at the salad bar? Seafood, you know, everything, any kind of restaurant you could go to without having to say, okay, here's this food and this food, which one's better? That's fine. But overall, you can look at a menu and say, okay, these types of foods are going to be better for me than these other types of foods. I want the steamed versus the sauteed. I want the grilled versus the fried, you know, it's just making sane choices, no matter what kind of restaurant or food you're eating.
Well, that's right. All things being equal, if the food is just as good and tasty and it's just as filling, why would you want to eat double the calories when you don't have to? And eating a lot of extra calories just because you weren't aware that it had so many calories, no one really wants to have that happen to them. You want to eat the best food and have the most amount of food for the least calories and be totally satisfied. That's kind of the goal here.
Yeah, but if you're married to someone like my wife, then you might also have all three of these books in front of you. The original Eat This, Not That, the Supermarket Survival Guide that I mentioned earlier, and the Eat This, Not That for Kids. So all in total here, I have $30 in books here filled with pictures of foods that I can only eat half of them listed in the book.
Well, I'm sure it's probably going to save you 30 pounds of weight gain over the next several years just by a few little things like that.
Oh, I can only hope. I can only hope.
Well, speaking of food, let's move into the recipe of the week.
All right. Now, this week, I was on Twitter, and I was having my snack, and I thought, you know what I'm going to put out there? What is everybody else having? And listener Libby, she's my Twitter friend, she chimed in. She was eating some zucchini hummus. That sounded really interesting. And she sent me a link to the article where she prepared this zucchini hummus. And it's a zucchini and tahini and olive oil and a cumin. And it looks really great. And she was dipping some vegetables in it. So it sounded like a really healthy snack. And it was a lot better tasting, I'm sure, than what I was having at the time. And so check us out, the zucchini hummus recipe from listener Libby. Thank you, Libby.
Well, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, you know, the hummus, my only other experience with hummus was on the show Friends. Remember that when Phoebe got the hummus on her shirt?
No.
Anyway, Jeff, what do we have for homework for everyone this week?
All right, the homework this week actually is really similar to what, Russ, you were saying at the beginning of the show. You probably didn't have any idea what I was going to say the homework was. But this week's homework has to do with goal clothing. When you lose some fat and want to show off to your friends or family, you don't plop down a scale and weigh yourself in front of them. That's just crazy. What you do is you wear smaller clothing that shows off your smaller size. And I know for a fact that 99% of our listeners will have a shirt or a pair of pants that is just a little too tight or uncomfortable to fit into right now. Use that clothing as another means to keep yourself motivated. Try it on a weekly basis to see your progress, but don't go to extremes. If you have a 44-inch waist, don't keep trying on a pair of pants with a 30-inch waist. Use some clothing that you think you can fit into in about 12 weeks. So maybe try a 42 or 40-inch waist, for example. Keep this up until you reach your final goal clothing sizes. And then on a weekly basis, you can really see how you're doing.
Very cool. Very cool. And what is our quote for the week?
Well, the quote this week comes from Heather, who's in our support group at fattofitsupport.com. In November, she posted before and after pictures of herself with a weight loss of 67.5 pounds. And it was in a topic called How's It Going? Keeping Everyone Updated. At the end of all of Heather's posts, she has this little quote, and it's just a great line. One mouthful, one workout, one day at a time.
Yep, that's what it's all about. So it's going to do it for the show. I want to thank everybody for downloading and for listening. All the links are over at the website at fat2fitradio.com if you'd like to check them out. And we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Send your feedback or questions to podcast@fattofitradio.com. For more information on today's show or any previous shows, visit the website at fattofitradio.com. If you would like to support the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast directory.